The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2013 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2013. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the internet. To find out more about ACCS, or to order additional conference talks, visit our website at accsedu.org. Look for the Conferences tab. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Cindy Waters, and you should have been given a handout, just a one-page handout as you walked in. If you did not receive one, before we get started, do you want to just lift up your hands and I'll see if one of my assistants, Kelly, there's someone on the front. Anybody else? Just wait on a few more people to come. All right, I'd like to pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time that you've set apart for us here at this conference. Thank you that you're so good to us. Thank you that your mercies are new every morning, and that you have given us much to be thankful for and much to just even ponder just in these last few hours of new ideas, new hopes, new dreams. And so we just commit those works to you. Lord, thank you that you have been faithful to us, that you are a sovereign King that we can worship, and we can have full confidence in you. So we just ask now for this time that you would be in our midst. Help me convey words clearly and give the audience ears to hear. And we just ask this in your Son's precious name. Amen. All right, so I'd like to begin with just a brief introduction and provide a little bit of my background, because I think that that may be helpful to you as to why I think the way I do and what makes me me. And also some of the events that I experienced on a journey that brought me to this point in the seminar. My name is Cindy Waters, and I work at Cary Christian School in Cary, North Carolina. I've been there roughly 10 years, 9 years teaching sixth grade math. So I have taught some other subjects, but primarily I'm the math teacher. A little bit about my family. I've been married to my wonderful husband, Hal, we're coming up on 25 years this December. And we have two children, Alexandria and Andrew, both of whom are CCS graduates. They're both at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Go Tar Heels. Alexandria will be a senior this year, and Andrew will be joining her this year as a first-year student. A little bit of my background information, so you just know a little bit about why I think maybe the way I do. I was not trained as a teacher. That is not my background. My training was as a CPA. So part of that training, I just see things as processes and systems and how things ought to flow. So if I know I'm at point A and something needs to land at point B, my mind works through all those ways to get it there. And I realize that some minds work that way and some minds do not, but my training has me think in those terms. I'm also married to my husband, Hal, who I mentioned, and for the past 20 years or so, he has developed military training systems. So when he develops these systems, failure is not an option. So if he has a plan A, he better have a plan B, a plan C, and so on, because lives are at risk should something fail in those processes. So that and living with him, we tend to think those ways. What do we go to if this doesn't pan out in a certain way? The other thing that just really changed my worldview, which I think you should probably know, is that as a child, my father died in a plane crash when I was 9 years old. So he was in a company Learjet, flew off on a business trip, and the plane crashed. And so as a child, obviously, my life changed instantaneously. But he was a VP of a Fortune 500 company, and on that plane were his entire management staff. So when that plane went down, not only was our family impacted, but his entire organization was impacted, by that, by losing their entire engineering key people in that department. So hearing those stories as a child, I think, has also influenced me. All right, so how did this seminar come about? Some distinct events happened in our lives, of my family, in the last few years. One year, the first Sunday out of school, I was having lunch with my family after church. We actually bumped into another CCS family, and they said, "What are your summer plans?" I said, "I have nothing planned." I walked out of the restaurant and fell off a curb, broke my ankle in multiple places, and spent the rest of the summer in a hospital bed, not knowing if I was going to come back to work that next year or not, or how that was going to play out. Flash forward a few more years, and I was working, helping my mother in Pennsylvania. My husband calls me and says, "Hey, do you mind if I have just a 30-minute surgery? It's just going to help some things, in my situation, and I'll have it on Thursday. I'll be out of work on Friday. Take the weekend to recover. Be back to work on Monday." I said, "Well, Monday I start school. If that's okay, if you think you can do that, then I'm okay for it. You do what you need to do." And I said, "But I can't even be there on Thursday with you because I have to take Andrew to go get his driver's license because that's been planned and we have an appointment. That's important for him. But as soon as he gets his license, I'll come to the hospital and be with you." Well, we didn't know that journey, that surgery was going to go very badly, requiring multiple more surgeries and hospitalizations. And he was basically out of work for roughly about 4 months, which required me in and out of the hospital and in and out of the classroom. Obviously not a planned event. Just shortly after he came out of the hospital, my mother fell. And we heard she was sent to the emergency room with a broken shoulder. Didn't know she had double pneumonia. The double pneumonia is what eventually led to her passing. So during a relatively short period of time, I made 7 trips back and forth from North Carolina to Pennsylvania, some planned over breaks, some not planned, some you need to, you get that phone call in the middle of the night, you need to go up to Pennsylvania, back. Some were for short periods of time, but I was out of the room my classroom for several weeks at one point in time. Right after that, I needed a little surgery. That surgery didn't go well, and they had to redo the surgery, and then the physician said, "You're out of the classroom for 3 weeks, no questions." So within a few years, life just seemed to happen, a lot of life. The good news is God was faithful throughout that entire ordeal. But I want to just be able to share some of the things that I learned that helped my classroom run efficiently, even in my absence. Now, I'd like to just, now that you know a little bit about me, I'd love to just learn a little bit about you so I know who's in the audience. If you are, we call our K-2 wing, our phonics wing. If you're a kindergarten through second grade teacher, could you raise your hand? Okay, how about 3rd through 5th? That's our grammar school. Wow, so it's definitely highest level. How about 6th through 8th is what we defined as logic school. 9th through 12th, administrators, board members, parents, friends. All right, great. How many people who raise their hand in a classroom have a dedicated assistant in the classroom? All right, so very few. I did not have one during these events, a dedicated parent in my classroom to pick up. If you have an assistant, that's really probably the best thing because they know how your classroom's going to run, and in your absence, they can generally take over because they're already an employee of the school. But especially if your school is smaller or just growing, you may not have that luxury, and during one of those crisis situations, you've got to figure out, what do we do now? Okay. All right, some of the goals that I have just during this hour together is, one, I'd just like to share what I've learned. I would love if you could leave here with one thing that you can immediately implement in your classroom. For me, when I come to the conference, and I've been maybe 4 times at the conference now, if I can have just one thing that I know I can take into my classroom immediately and implement, I find that that's a successful conference because it can change the way my whole classroom runs. I still remember my first conference learning one thing from a math teacher that I've now used in the past 9 years. I plan on a question and answer period at the end. If you find that you either don't get your question answered or you would like to speak to me privately about that, I'm more than happy to stay a few minutes and talk with you privately. If you see me walking around the conference at any time and you wanted to stop me or go have coffee or something, I'd be fine to do that too. All right, I believe the outline for this session is on page 60 in your spiral-bound conference notebook. We're going to start with the first topic of supreme security because this is so foundational. For those of you who know me, and there are several CCS people in here, one of my favorite passages of scripture is Psalm 139. There was a point in my life where I meditated on that for a solid month, nothing but Psalm 139. And it just talks about how God knitted you in your mother's womb. He knows your thoughts. One of the verses says, "In your book they were written, all the days fashioned for me." God knows your number, okay? He knows your days. He knows what you want to, what he wants to have accomplished for the period of time that you are here on this earth. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know," the emphasis of mine is the know. We have conviction. We can be certain that for those who love God, all things, not just the happy things, but all things work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. Earlier in that same chapter, Paul writes in Romans 8:18, "For I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us." Our confidence is Christ. There is not one hair that can fall from your head that he doesn't know about. And we just serve a sovereign king, and that becomes foundational when you're going through some of these life crises. I had the pleasure of hearing Dr. Mark Bailey, professor of Bible exposition, and he's president of Dallas Theological Seminary, last July when our church happened to host a conference on suffering. And some of the key points that he mentioned, I just recently found his sermon notes in my Bible, pretty providential, are that Christians are not exempt from suffering. All suffering is temporary in light of eternity. God gives grace during temporary times of suffering. And the ultimate effect of God's gracious call is eternal glory. God's strength is sufficient for temporary times of suffering. He shared this quote from C.S. Lewis, which I think is very apt to our discussion here today. "God whispers to us in our pleasures, he speaks to us in our conscience, and he shouts to us in our pains. It's his megaphone to rouse a deaf world." The passage that Dr. Bailey shared that can also make a big difference to you when you're going through difficult times was from 1 Peter 5:10. "After you have suffered for a little while, the God of all grace who called you to his eternal glory in Christ will himself perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you." Now, when I shared this session with a colleague of mine, one of her questions was, "What did your spiritual life look like when you were going through some of these trying times? Were you able to read your Bible?" I can say when I was on a lot of drugs, I could not. I had the attention span of a gnat. I couldn't even follow Sesame Street's plot. It was pretty bad. People would bring me books and say, "Here, read. This will encourage you so much." And I just, "Thank you." There was no way I could read. But what was helpful at that point was having scripture memorized and in my heart, because I still could bring that to my recollection, and I could still pray. And the Holy Spirit just has the ability to intercede on your behalf with groanings, too deep for words. So during those times, sometimes you will be able to pray. Sometimes you may not have access to your Bible. When my husband was going through his situation, there was a point in time where it looked really, really grim. And so my worship at that point became crying out to God and agreeing with God, "Lord, if this is your will, please take him and don't have him suffer anymore." Thankfully, he's alive and well and doing great, and people see him. It's a true miracle. When my mother was in her situation and passing on, worship took a different angle there too. She was a great lover of music, and we were just able to worship a lot with music. I remember sitting in a hospital room with her. Everyone else was gone, but the TV was on. It was Easter morning, and we were just hearing glorious resurrection music coming through. We were also able to fellowship with believers that we didn't know. She had changed churches, so she was at a church that was not my childhood church. And those people came and stood with us and prayed with us. Her pastor also came in and shared communion with us. And that was just a special time with my mom and my siblings. We knew we would never have that time again. So worship can take place. It may look different than your normal worship. The big thing there was just, I think, being able to know with confidence that God had a plan and it was good, and that his plan was perfect, and that I could agree to accept his will no matter what that was. All right, I'd like to move from supreme security to preemptive planning. My principal, who is here, hello, Mr. Hollow. He has a saying, the best way to avoid having an emergency is don't have the emergency. And I like that. He reminds us, if you cannot have the emergency, that is a lot better. So you can expect the best, but plan for the worst. I'll address the administrators here first. One of the things that you may want to consider is succession planning. In the event of a principal or one of your administrators, in the event that they are not able to perform a duty, do you have somebody that can step in into that position in a relatively short period of time, even if it's just on a temporary basis? Maybe you want to identify a talent pool. I know our board is, although the board has filled positions, they have identified other men who they are in the process of training and having them learn the classical methodology so that when board members leave the board, there is an identifiable pool of qualified candidates to then go onto the board. You might need to cross-train key positions. People and vendors like to get paid. During my CPA days, I worked at a large hospital in the Raleigh area, and we had one person that knew how to run payroll for every employee of the hospital. That person forgot to file the taxes that were withheld, and we really wanted to fire that person. Okay, that was a pretty much gross negligence on his part. When we contemplated firing him, we found out there was not one other person in the organization that knew how to get payroll out. So rather than firing him, we gave him a raise so that he would stay long enough so that we could make sure somebody else was trained in that position. So if you have positions within your organization that are critical to the running of your school, you may want to make sure that you have more than one person trained in those positions. Just near and dear to my heart, consider not all traveling together. Potentially you have one person stay back, or maybe you take two different planes or two different vans or something like that. Now on to the teachers. For your planning, Proverbs 6:6-8 tells us to consider the ant that with no supervision works in the summer to provide for the future. I know we talked about the Proverbs 31 woman earlier in one of the sessions, and it talks about that she does not sit around and eat the bread of idleness. I know in the summer I would prefer to eat the bread of idleness, but it's not in my best interest or in my classroom's best interest. And because of what she does, she can smile at the future. And that's the type of countenance I want to have in my classroom, is that I can smile at the future. Whatever comes by, I feel ready for and I'm excited about. So I would encourage you to effectively use this summer to plan and take care of any unfinished business. From a professional standpoint, What I like to do is plan out my year. And what I do is I call it a Q&D. It's a quick and dirty. On the back of your handout, one of our teachers has just put a calendar for the quarter on a spreadsheet. She developed this. She sends this out to the rest of her favorite teachers. And just when I'm enjoying a cup of coffee at home or something, I try to just plan out my math for the year. I know I have 138 lessons. I have 4 quarters. Where are all the school breaks going to fit and fall? When is school picture going to be taken? Do we have an early release? When is Christmas this year? All those kind of things. So I'll take the school's calendar that's published, and I'll take just a blank calendar, put in those significant times where I know maybe midterms are out and I want to have at least 3 test grades done. Now, this is for my math plan. This is probably the easiest one to plan out. I tend to teach 5 lessons in the beginning of the year, which is what the quarter one, which you have. I teach 2 lessons at a time, so we go pretty rapidly through the book at the beginning. But after every 5 lessons, I fall into a pattern of 5 lessons, then we'll have a test, and so on. Once they get into 3rd and 4th quarter, I start quizzing more because that's what the rest of logic and rhetoric school does. But as they start as a 6th grader, I treat them more like a grammar stage student. But if this were, let's say, if I were a literature teacher, and bless you literature teachers because I could not do what you do. Let's say I know I'm going to teach 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and then I'm going to have another book, Johnny Tremain. And my goal is to get those 2 books read that quarter. I might say, okay, on each book, I know I want 3 quizzes, 1 major test, 1 major paper, and I figure out my quarter. Now, this is not, I have to live by this. This just gives me that feel for, have I allocated enough time? Can I get through the curriculum objectives? You know, once I have those test dates in, then I have to say, oh, it's a 200-page book. How do I assign the reading? Does that make sense? It may find that I'm assigning 80 pages for a 7th grader to read. That may be too much. So then you may have to say, you know what, I might have to rechange my plan here. So the more and more you do this, the easier this gets. The first few years of me doing this, it took me a while to figure out where I wanted to have some significant assignments. In the winter, I tend to take about a week off from our Saxon curriculum just because we're all kind of bored and it's cold outside and it's yucky and we just want to do something different. And I like to do a graphing project. I tend to time that with an open house that we have so that the children's work is hanging when their parents come to see the school. So, but this is just for me. I like to have all that planned out before my school year ever starts. If I were not in my classroom, someone could pull this out and say, well, she was at least planning to get this done, and they would at least know what they could do in my absence. Use your summer to read and research new ideas. Plan activities in case you are gone. I knew this year my son was graduating. I knew I was taking graduation day off. I booked that sub, you know, right when school started because I knew that there were other faculty members that were going to be in the same position. I didn't want a teacher or a substitute to come in and have to teach formulas that I knew were very important for someone to know and understand and be able to take in future math lessons. So I arranged for her to make our little buckyballs. It's a little activity. I was going to do it anyway, but I just saved that for her because I knew that that would be an easier activity. One of the things I did this year, which was, I don't know, I just decided I wasn't going to do the graphing project. I wanted to do something different. So I thought, well, I'm going to be teaching about pattern and symmetry. I started looking at Oriental rugs. I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. And North Carolina has a tradition in textiles where we, Capel rugs and I think Karistan rugs are both based in North Carolina. And, oh, they're teaching about the Middle East in geography. And how could I integrate all this together? So I started this Oriental rug project. I didn't know how well it was going to go over. I didn't know if the boys would be thinking, oh, Mrs. Waters, what have you done? The kids loved it. What I found was I allocated 3 days for the project. I had everything else for the quarter pretty much completed, so I saved 3 days at the end. By then, they were somewhat checked out and ready to go on break anyway. But what I found was this project could have gone on, I don't want to say all year, but it could have gone on for a more significant period of time where I could have just said, oh, I'm not going to be here all next week. Bring out your Oriental rug project. So this just gives you an idea. I don't know if you can really see this, but I let them go to the Capel rug site and pull up their inspiration rug and print that out. And then they were to, using pattern and symmetry, design their own rugs, which in a few days, I would say the kids loved this and just had so much fun with it. They found out I have a lot of windows in my room. They found that they could put a sheet of paper on the window with their rug underneath it and trace it. And they just had, it was a delightful time in my class, and they just were sharing one another's rugs with each other. So if you can come up with a project that is not a lot of time on a sub to prepare, and that will differ in everyone's class, but just I was thankful to have an idea like this, and I will probably use this project, but now I know to allocate more time for it. One of the things that I did early on, which you can do this for some subjects easier than others, so math was a little easy for this to do. I copied my tests out before I ever started teaching 10 years ago. So you may have, depending on how many subjects you teach, or you may have Bible for the year, or something that you know you can make copies of. And I asked for roughly $100 worth of folders. And administration came back and said, what do you need? We have never had somebody come in and ask for this many folders. What in the world are you doing? So trust me, I'm just getting my room set up, and I've copied all those tests for we, because I usually have between 65 and 70 students a year. So I copied all those tests. Every time I pull the test for that year, I immediately get it copied and put it right back. So that drawer stays full. That is such a refreshing feeling. I know Kelly, one of the assistants that was giving the handout sub for me when I had that surgery at the, I don't know, 1 year ago or whatever. And she could just open up a drawer, pull out everything. It was right there. It was at her fingertips. It wasn't something that she had to stress about to go find. On a personal front, use your summers to do all your home repairs, your doctor's appointments, schedule your travel plans with your family. Look at their schedules. I'll move on to streamline systems. I will say that a little work on the front end of getting your systems in place pays off huge dividends. If you were to walk into my room, you should be able to see with the way I have my furniture arranged and all my curriculum, my files, everything else, you should be able to see what I have without me even being in the room. So some of those are not, you know, really grandiose ideas. It's things like labeling the folder so that someone just doesn't pick up a folder and go, I have no idea what she has in here, but here's this folder. Maybe it's important, okay? Filing things back in and putting them back in their proper slot. I tend to use folders and notebooks. So those are my two big things, but I also label all my notebooks. Clear out your clutter. Someone walking in your room just doesn't know if it's important or not. So if you're not using it and you really don't need it, just get rid of it. One of the things that I have found helpful is I have my notebook. And all the students know what this notebook is. It sits on my desk on a tray. On the front, my roster with everyone in my homeroom. On the back, all their chore charts. Who takes out the pizza boxes? Who takes out the trash? Who wipes down the desks on a daily basis? So if a sub comes in, they can say, Billy, you need to do trash. Who are my two door holders? And they have it all there. Inside, I keep the rosters of the other two classes. Generally, I teach three sections. I have all their, I assign seats in my classroom, so all the seating charts, so a sub would actually know who is in each seat. Because they may not know your families and your students. The hymns for the quarter, the school's calendar, We memorize in sixth grade the book of Colossians every year, so I would have what they need to work on from memory with the students. Every year we publish for the sixth graders what the classroom expectations are. So this is helpful for a sub to know what have you communicated to the children as being your expectations. I have carpool duty in here, and also then my general classroom procedures, just walking through a substitute. These are the things that you need to know about my classroom. This is when the bell rings. This is when you have snack. This is when you eat. Those kinds of things your subs may not know. Another thing that I do that I have found very helpful is I have a little blue folder. I know these are all Carolina blue. This must have been prophetic when I bought these. I've had this folder for years, far before my children went to Carolina. But this folder is at my fingertips. Inside this folder, and it's plasticized, you know, a dollar, and I've gotten years of worth out of this one folder. If someone is absent in my class for a test, I immediately have that copy with their name on it, and it goes in this folder. So anybody coming in my room to substitute for me, if they need to give a makeup test, or if someone says I was absent, or I need to retake a test, they pull out this folder, open it up, Billy, here's your test. There you go. Okay. So I have found that that's very useful. I also keep a pink folder that has all my emergency information for each one of the students and their medical information, and an orange folder that just has forms ready in case someone is absent. Successful students. In real estate, you've probably heard location, location, location. The seven laws, law seven, review, review, review. Successful students, train, train, train. Train early, train often, train all the time. You get what you inspect. So keep on inspecting and keep on training. They should know the standards of conduct for whether you're in the room or out of the room. What is the work ethic that's expected? Where do things belong? Should they put them back? What do they do if they're absent, and what should they do with their work when they're done? One of the things that I found helpful for substitutes is if you can identify helpers. Typically, in every class, there's someone who just has that gift of helping, and you know who they are. They come to you and they go, is there anything I can do? Can I sweep for you? Can I take your trash out? They're just wonderful to have in your classroom. If your sub knows that they can call upon that student and you identify that person in every class, it's very helpful for them. Hey, if you want a straight answer, you go to Susie. Susie will tell you the honest truth, and she's going to be helpful. If you need something to be run down to administration or you need to get an administrator to come down here, ask Susie. In room B, ask Bobby. You get it. But it really does help to have some helpers identified. One of the things that I thought I would teach you is just some of the hand signals. Again, I want you to be able to walk away with at least one thing that you can immediately implement. I wrote these on the handout. I just want to go over some of the hand signals that we've used in the classroom that just allow the classroom to run smoothly and effectively without a lot of stopping and starting. We have a signal at our school. If you put your thumb up, you have to go to the bathroom, which eliminates... Oh, do you have a question? No, I just need to go to the bathroom. Oh, okay, well, no, you can't go. Generally, if I'm speaking, I don't let the students go, but if they're doing quiet work, they may go. But this, universally in our school, means I need to go to the bathroom. We've gone to this means I need a tissue. Some of the kids may sit near the tissue box, some may not. But this, you don't have to stop and teach. You could just say, oh, Susie, can you hand the tissue box to Billy? He needs a Kleenex. This means, I don't understand what you're talking about. Just, you're using a term that I don't understand. And some have gone to this, where they can privately do that. I don't want all my classmates to know that they may know the term and I don't. Okay? So this, just a pinky in the air, means you're saying something that I don't understand in my mind. Or I want to tell you privately I'm not getting it. I call this the index tornado. It just means you said it so quickly, or you said it and I didn't get it, I'm taking notes. Can you please repeat it? Whirl it around one more time. And then one of the teachers told me she uses a fist, which means in a very respectful way, you have just said something really backwards or you're not saying it correctly. How many times has that happened? I know I've said something and you in your brain think, oh, I just said that perfectly. And then you look over and one of the best students in the class just, you really didn't say that. You said it backwards. You meant to say, do not do this, and you said, do it. So that is just a nice, respectful way for them to catch your errors. And I know in the logic stage, kids love to catch adults making mistakes. One of the things that you will need to determine is how much information you want to disclose to a student based on what is happening in a crisis. You may just want to just say, we need to pray for someone, they're in the hospital, or you may want to disclose more. That is probably something that you would want to talk to your administrator about. Which leads us to attentive administrators. It's imperative to keep administration informed. Teaching is just such a unique job. You can't just show up and it's fine. You know, if I worked in the business world and I took a day off, things would just sit at a desk, it'd be fine. Pick it up when you get back. You can't just walk away and have 20-some-odd children unattended in your classroom. Someone has to be there. So it's imperative that you inform administration when you need to be out of the classroom. Who will be your contact? Do you have their cell phone information or their email? One of the things that administration shared with us this year was they gave us all our staff email, staff cell phone numbers to put into our phones. That was overwhelming for me to get a list. I'd just gotten a new iPhone. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm so bad at doing all this. Ah! Had a parent come in. She was going to help me grade papers. I said, you know, see, you have an iPhone. How good are you at that? Oh, great. I loved it. Would you like to put in all my contacts for me? Be a huge help. In 1 hour, she had all the contacts put in my phone. So now that has just been such a blessing to me because I know that if I'm in a crisis situation, I need to get a hold of somebody, they're in my phone. One of the things that you may have to figure out is who is going to substitute for you and who is responsible for obtaining that substitute. I know in our earlier years when we were smaller, for one, we didn't need as many substitutes, but as we've gotten bigger, we have people that aren't there and we need more substitutes. So we actually have a substitute list that's hierarchical with who do you call first. It also discloses to us what subjects they do and don't want to teach and what days and times they are or are not available. As events unfold, update your administrators. I can't tell you how much it meant to me to just know that I had full administrative support when I was going through these situations, and also the prayer support that the school provided was really outstanding. Your human resources or business office, somebody will probably have forms if you need them. If you have a disability or if you have to claim, I think, the family medical leave, there are forms that you may need to fill out, and that may be something that you need to speak to someone in the business office about. One of the things that I know I had difficulty with was what can I do if I can't communicate? And just know that sometimes when you're in a hospital setting, either you can't get a cell phone or they do a cell service, or they do not want you to use your cell phone. And that's difficult when you know you need to try to get a hold of somebody, but you also don't want to leave a loved one, or maybe you're the person that's injured and cannot leave. So what can I do when I can't communicate? Your spouse or significant other or some family member probably also needs to know, if you're the person who's down, who do they call for you? Significant substitutes. I have found that it's very helpful to form relationships with the substitutes that work well in your classroom. Kelly, who filled in for me, is now sharing my room at the conference with me. We have become very good friends. She knows my classroom. The students loved her. She did what I expected her to do. It was helpful to have those relationships formed. Maybe you take a day off and you think, wow, that person did a really, really great job in my classroom. Or maybe a parent walks in and says, I just love being here. Boy, what could I do to help? Well, maybe why don't you spend some time in my classroom and just see how things go and help around. And as the year progresses, they may be an ideal candidate. Or someone may tell you, I'm really looking to work at your school. How does that happen? Well, substituting is a good way to get a sense of, do they like the job and the task in hand? If you know you need a substitute, book them well in advance, for example, for travel, weddings, and those kind of things. And just keep in mind that as your school grows, you will need more substitutes. All right, compassionate connections. It was very helpful when my husband got so sick. Someone came to me and said, can I be your contact person? I'll send out all the emails. And at the time, I just said, no, I just don't need that. I didn't feel like I knew that person well enough, and I just didn't want to bother them. As events unfolded, it became very apparent I needed somebody. And then someone else came to me and said, may I be your contact person? Yes, you may. I knew that this person runs all the events at our school. She was highly organized. She was my contact person, and I had another one through our church family. And those two people, if I communicated with, got the information and the updates out, and I knew that I could, what needed to stay confidential could stay confidential, and I could just entrust them with that information. Know as you're disclosing things, you may want to have different levels that I referred to earlier with the students. You may want to be telling administrators and your staff more detail than maybe your parents and your students. And families and friends and church may have another level of disclosure. I will say texting is a lifesaver. Probably most of you in here text. At the time some of these events occurred, I had just gotten texting. It was a lifesaver because a lot of times you do not want to be communicating verbally while someone is going through a difficult situation. When my mother was dying, even though my siblings and I were in the same room, sometimes rather than speaking to one another so that my mother would hear, we would just text one another. So texting did become something that became just a real lifesaver. At the time of one of these events, I did not have the ability to group message. And so if I informed one sibling, I had to then inform another and another friend, and that was burdensome. Having group messaging or Facebook or some type of way that you can communicate with a lot of people at one time is helpful. I do know some people that have used the Caring Bridge. I put several websites on the front of your handout. Caring Bridge is one of them. That's a free personal website for people facing serious medical conditions or hospitalizations. It's a protected website, and it also has no advertising on it. One of the websites that was a huge blessing to us was MealTrain, www.mealtrain.com. There's also one that's similar called takethemameal.com. Someone asked me if they could set up a meal train for me and just provide meals for my family while I was not able to. I had it work really, really well one time, not so well the other time. The time it worked very, very well, people went onto the meal train and you can say, I'm going to bring a meal on Wednesday. And it's going to be chicken with rice and broccoli and chocolate chip cookies. And then someone else then says, well, I'm bringing lasagna and I'll bring that on Thursday. And so you can get very specific in what you're bringing. When that did not work well is when people just got on there and said, I'll bring a meal. And for about two or three solid weeks, we had nothing other than vast quantities of ziti, lasagna, every pasta dish, which, you know, you want to receive gratefully, but there came a point in time where we just couldn't even eat it anymore. We just were either giving it to neighbors or putting it in our freezer. One of the things that some of these ideas come from a person's blog, other friends that have gone through significant events. So I'm just going to share some of the things that I learned throughout this, is somebody told me, put a cooler on your porch or on your driveway if you don't have a porch. That becomes very convenient because there's a lot of times where you'll just miss the person who's delivering food. You're at the hospital or you're somewhere and you just physically can't leave. It's too important and you need to stay. So keep a cooler available for people just to put things in. Also request that everything is just in a disposable dish. It is very, very difficult when you're going through what you're going through to have to worry about, was this the Smith's pot? Whose lid went with this pan? It's just overwhelming. For the expense, just buy the disposable. And if you're doing that a meal for somebody, bless them and just say, don't bring any of it back. Just throw away what you can't use. Also, it's helpful if the meals are delivered cooked. If you're going to have maybe a 20-minute window to come from a hospital and quickly eat, if somebody delivers a meal and say, oh, you only have to cook it for an hour, you don't have that time. So it's very helpful if the meals arrive cooked, and also set a time when those meals can be delivered in advance. There were times when we would be at home waiting for a meal because someone had said, I'm bringing you dinner. And at about 7:30, they say, oh, well, we ate. And then we cleaned up the kitchen, and then I got caught up with homework. So here's your meal. By then, my football player son was ready to, you know, start stripping wallpaper and eat it off of our walls. One of the blogs recommended taking people muffins for the morning. If you're going to take someone dinner, also take them muffins. I can attest to that. When my husband was in the hospital, I never got down to the cafeteria, so I ate a scone and a cup of coffee every day for about 4 months. So if somebody just brings you muffins as an act of kindness, that would be great. There are times where maybe you can't be the person blessing somebody with a meal. Maybe your work schedule doesn't provide that. You can bless them with a gift card. I had a situation this year where my room mom's husband was at Duke Hospital. And her one request was, can somebody get me a Starbucks card? I can do that. She knew if she could run by Starbucks on the way, she could sit in the hospital room all day with him and be okay. Some of the local grocery stores in our area, I know Whole Foods has where you can pick up an entire ready meal. So if you can't cook it, I think it's maybe $15, $20. You pick it all up, you go through the checkout, and you've got a ready meal to deliver to someone's home. Also, some of the areas have these meal assembly places where you might even want to tell a friend, here's some money, can you go make 20 meals and put them in my freezer for me or wherever you're going to store those. And also, if something is a special recipe, we got some really unbelievable meals. It's nice if you tell someone your secret family recipe because we really enjoyed those. Just speaking briefly on compassion, I know when I fell and had my surgery, and I started my year in a wheelchair, I thought, what kid wants to have a teacher in a wheelchair? That is not the fun teacher you want to have. And so I prayed before school started, Lord, just teach these students compassion. If nothing else, help them be compassionate to me. And one of the things that happened that year is just an amazing blessing to me. I had a little boy at Christmas time. Well, at Christmas time, we had a few minutes to share. I thought, I'm just going to get into their heads and find out, what are you asking for Christmas? So I went up and down the rows. They all told me what they wanted. And at the very end, a little boy stood up and said, but Mrs. Waters, you didn't tell us what you wanted for Christmas. And I said, well, honey, you know, we've had so many medical bills this year. My husband and I aren't doing gifts. We're just going to pay off our medical bills and start the year on a good, you know, new year, new start. He said, okay. Went away. Didn't think anything of it. Got back to school in January, a couple weeks into it, I was in a study hall. He comes in grinning ear to ear. I said, what's up? He said, remember what you wanted for Christmas? And I said, I don't think I wanted anything. I was just going to pay off bills. He gave me a little envelope. Well, you could feel in the envelope there were dimes and pennies and that kind of thing. So I privately opened it later. That little boy had called all his classmates and said, let's help her pay off her medical bills. Really sweet. I still remember going down to my principal's office and just crying, just that God had just honored me. And it was just so humbling. But the story gets even better. About a week or two later, I came in from recess, and there was this little, Starbucks had been giving away these little mittens that you could put a Starbucks card in for Christmas. And there was this little mitten on my desk. And I have a rule, you don't put anything on my desk. This is my area, you don't put anything on it. So I saw this little red mitten, and I thought, okay, this looks like a little sixth grade girl wallet. Okay, so, because I picked it up and I hear coins and everything else. And so I said, we have a mitten here. Whose little mitten is this? And a girl stood up and she said, well, it's mine, but it's yours. Well, it's mine. Can we just talk about it later? Okay. So she came up to me later and she said, well, Mrs. Waters, when this boy collected money for you, I didn't have mine ready, and so mine's late. I said, you know, that is so sweet of you. Thank you so much. Hug, hug, kiss, kiss. I later opened up that wallet because I, again, felt pennies and nickels and dimes. She had rolled the money real, real tight. So I started unrolling, and I saw little $1 bills. Then I started seeing $100 bills. When I found out later, because I wrote an email to her parents saying, thank you so much for your generous gift, they said, oh, no. She came to us and wanted to clear out her entire savings account for you. And they said, and we let her do it. So you, did they learn lessons that year? Yes, they did. All right, I'll move on. As I see some of you crying, I'm crying. We'll all be crying. All right, laundry, lawn care, letters, and the like. Things can pile up very quickly when left unattended. When I started finally opening my husband's medical mail, I opened mail for 8 hours and sorted it on a couch by piles. Just which doctors, which hospital, which radiologists, which ones were paid by insurance, which ones weren't. So things have to get taken care of, and it can be overwhelming. There are websites that you can sign up to have provide help. Sign Up Genius is one of them. You can go on there and say, I'll mow the lawn, or I'd like to go do her laundry or iron or whatever it is. Also on the Caring Bridge website, apparently part of their website is also a support section. Does your spouse know, if you're the one that pays the bills, does he or she know how to do all that? I've done that for years in our family, and I was discussing this with my husband. I thought we were fine. He said, well, dear, I really don't know what you do and how you do it and where do I look. And I said, they're all clearly marked file folders. Pull open this drawer. It's all in there. But someone does need to have an idea of how that runs should the person in your family not be available to do that. Also, do you know where your wills, your power of attorneys, your health care directives are? Passwords. One of the gifts my husband has given me is an envelope that says, only in case of emergency, open this, and has every one of his passwords should I need to get into his computer and find things for our family. Also, someone probably needs a key to your house who is someone other than your family member, if someone needs to get into your house and get things. That is about all I wanted to share, but I wanted to, we have about 8 or so minutes left for questions. I welcome any questions that you might have. I know you have questions. No questions? Well, I hope you never have to go through difficult times. I don't wish that on you. But I do wish that if anything happens, that you will have that peace that only Christ can provide you. Thank you so much for your time.